some pretty definite ideas as to the direction which he was going to move. Did his views change? I can't tell you whether they changed. But as far as the final decision, he withheld going past the point of no return in deference to the bar and to others who wanted to get an answer. He deliberately did not pay deference and also withheld the delegation to the Attorney General to inform the people. The decision did not become final until, what did you say this morning?
This morning.
It should not become final until the Attorney General informed them this morning. However, the President had some pretty definite ideas a week ago. And did not discuss them.
Then on the ABA rationale.
Oh, see, how much of that has come out for tea?
Well, on
the go ahead.
We are going to release the Attorney General's letter at 7:30 after we finish speaking.
Yeah.
Which is a good letter. We'll simply say it's what didn't work.
Yeah.
Now, the type things will be where the first six submitted your first choice. The answer to that is no.
No.
You said all along
no.
that you had others under consideration. However, five out of the six, the Attorney General consulted with the ABA on, you did not have much detail about them, and the Attorney General asked for their advice. So happened, within 2 hours, after those consultations began, it leaked and speculation occurred.
Right.
Well, when did the President decide not to consult or have the Attorney General consult with other names? That I'd say about 2 hours after the original consultation began.
Yeah.
Because they leaked.
Yeah, the moment, yeah.
Yeah.
No. You can say the moment that when the President picked up the morning paper. So the moment the President, at the very moment that the President found that the ABA he decided to not go that route in the future.
Right.
Now get in this idea of being pilloried in the press.
No, sir.
I won't say that. And that also very sure. And then also that the President was frankly surprised and distressed as a lawyer. I think the lawyers who have a high dedication to the principle of confidentiality would have leaked. I want you to say that.
Yes, sir.
Attorney General has no objection to that, does he? Or did you raise that point?
I talked about it. He wants us to make this point, but he doesn't want to make it in a way that's going to totally upset the ABA and so forth. But I think I can make this
all right,
point. So way on background, too. The other point, too, is the fact that these two individuals have not leaked, and the others who had under consideration didn't leak, which shows
right.
that we had underestimated the confidentiality of the process.
Yeah.
I think that's basically it. On women, we simply concluded that the best way to handle that would be, as the President said all along, women have been under consideration.
That's right.
Women
and very active
and serious consideration.
Serious consideration.
But the President did not choose a person simply on a matter of sex.
Yeah.
And this is a case of why he chose, why not. And why he chose is the fact that you picked the individuals who you felt were the best qualified.
Yeah.
Well, then you mean the women aren't qualified?
No.
I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not saying that the woman was not qualified, but that as his speech should indicate that he picked the individuals who were the best qualified. And at this time in its history, the court needed the best qualified people. This was not a time the President felt for trying to balance the court by region, to balance it geographically, by sex, by nationality, race, or religion. Put that in. Because I have that in my speech. I don't say it that way, but this is a time when the preeminent thing basically was his qualification, and frankly, belonging.
Then I have, I've gone by.
I would say this. The president believes that the president has directed the attorney general. Because, but in view of the action, the APA is saying that this very outstanding woman was not qualified. He's directing the attorney general. Whenever vacancies occur on circuit courts of appeals, that women should be considered and whenever possible appointed so that we can prepare a woman for service on the Supreme Court. The president believes a woman ought to be on the Supreme Court. I think that should be said. And he's directed the attorney general on vacancies occur in the federal district courts or federal circuit courts. That they'll say, well, what about Hofstadter or something like that?
But you don't know that she wasn't under consideration. I'm not going to say that.
That's right. So that we can prepare that we have to have some on the court.
Okay.
Of course, these are the people in the court who've been on the courts.
Then I've gone through your background, Mr. President, after you appointed Chief Justice.
Yeah.
Would you make a lot of key points, which I'm just going to use for my guidance, would you make
my problem?
Well, you make the point that you don't feel that we should be a Jewish seat of blacks, and you agree with the wire on that. You don't feel that the regional or the race is involved,
right?
But you are section, but you were going to make sure that qualified individuals from all sections of the country came before you for consideration.
Right.
That in this case, political clearance? No, political clearance.
That's right.
The president has made it clear from the outset that he didn't feel politics should be.
You say there was no political clearance on either end.
And then refer to what you said about political.
Right. That's very good.
So I think, based upon what you said at that time, we would change.
Fine. I'm going to rock. What are they doing?
Oh, it's great.
I just got confused.
Oh, yeah. Totally. This would be a total surprise.
They haven't got anything yet.
No, sir. Absolutely not. They're cold, you know. All right. And they'll see me out in the hall. I sit down. If it's about the court, I've said all I said to them. Just anyway.
Take this over to Rose. Woods, please. Rose, there's a typo where it says I appointed an assistant attorney, Office of Legal Counsel. It's Assistant Attorney General, Office of Legal Counsel. No, don't do it over for me, because I don't need it. Oh, sure, he's got to have the release right after I finish. Why? Well, ask him if he needs it. Maybe they can just take it off and then not give it out. Ask him what he needs. I think you might as well. I think you just might as well retype the damn thing and let him have it. It's right on the first copy, it just isn't right on the type on this copy. The general's not office. You got the last page? Fine. You got the last page? Fine.
Are you sure you want to do that one page over?
No, hell, it's only one.
Because it was sort of low on the page, I noticed, too.
Okay.
I think it's very good enough. And from what I know, here would be really not great.
Well, Rehnquist does not know, except among people that know him, but the qualifications. qualification thing. They can't knock it. Anybody with aspersions, class and standard, they can put a whole bunch of goddamn stops in this. But his aspersions, class and standard, he's brilliant here in the government. He just runs circles around all these other guys.
And I know Hope told me that they have phones. He's got power, great, and he's a little older than...
Well, everybody has a character.
He thinks she could even make a deal with him, he could probably.
I have. So it's our, we've got the deal made, but nobody knows it.
No, well, I didn't...
Nobody can be told it, and I deny it, anybody who said it.
Oh, fine.
Powell doesn't want us there, he'll get off. But he's everybody's choice. The difficulty of Rehnquist's case is that, my God, he's 47, but that goddamn Potter Stewart was 40 when they...
Well, Whitaker White was only,
38 or something.
He was very young.
Very young, and nobody raised a question about it. They want the young man to hell with him.
Well, they need
a double standard.
They need a young man.
What?
They need a young man.
And Rehnquist will be there for 25 years, and all we need is somebody there for 25 years.
Right.
It sticks it to them because they've been claiming it. And it's true that the woman that is all Friday were the top of the class or something they want. You've got two, each one was first in his class. To me, it's been a goddamn thing. We've seen people around here.
Oh, there's a dollar of people gone after they get out of school.
That's right. But on the other hand, for them, it makes them the top players in the country.
Well, I think the fact that he was the head of the American Bar, president of the American Bar Association, all of those things.
Yeah, just a minute, for maybe another show. Yeah. Yep. 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 Okay, September 23rd, September 17th, what's the day? The day? What? No, what day of the month?
October 23rd.
September 23rd. September what was one? Yeah. That's a change. It says over the past 2 months. It should be over the past month.
I need your copy.
No, over the past month. Just change it off. You can do what you want about running the goddamn thing for Ron.
We'll give them a rough one, and then they run it.
Yeah.
I mean, just so they can read it. We type anything that has your writing on, we type so they'll know. So they won't say they misunderstood it. Well, like read the end, where you wrote something, that we type out for them. I don't give them this kind of a copy because I don't trust them with a paragraph to write. We'll give them the other copy.
Oh. Yeah, this is a damn good speech.
It is. It's the next one.
I wrote it in the middle of the night, but it has... The difficulty is that I can't really get the speech writers to... I just don't put it in... They're good, but they're not... And they're frankly... Just think what we had before. We had nothing before. Can you remember? Jesus Christ, we didn't have anybody to write anything, you know, with real outlines. But now we've got Price, Sapphire, Cannon. All the
but it's hard to get
fitted in.
Your touch or something.
Fitted in the style.
It makes such a difference, yeah.
But this does make a difference, don't you think?
That's
sounds?
Yeah, that's great.
You could tell this is
fine. I can tell when I type. I always,
fine. I'll probably come over here afterwards anyway, because I'll have to talk to Benjamin and a couple of people. I'm not going to take any calls afterwards because I'm trying to cut off Berger. I don't want to talk to Berger under any circumstances, and I'm not going to talk to Walsh under any circumstances. Those two calls are not to come through. Is that clear? Well, I'll tell you the way I've done it. I'm not going to have any calls come through. I'll call out, but no calls will come through. And I've told them to make all the calls to you. But let me tell you, if Berger or Walsh call, just say, I'm sorry, he's off to dinner. He had a dinner engagement tonight. He had to rush right out, and I won't be able to reach until around midnight. Okay? My tradition philosophy, I do not agree with the president of every issue. It would be a total repudiation of our constitutional system if judges on the Supreme Court or any federal court for that matter were like puppets on a string pulled by the president to appoint them. When I appointed Chief Justice Berger, I told him that from the day that he was confirmed to the Senate, he could expect that I would never talk to him about a case pending before the court. In the case of both Chief Justice Berger and Chief Justice Black, and in the case of the two nominees that I shall present to the Senate tomorrow, their sole obligation is to the Constitution and to the American people, not to the president to appoint them. As far as judicial philosophy is concerned, it is my belief that it is the duty of a judge to interpret the Constitution and not to place himself above the Constitution or outside of it. He should not twist or bend the Constitution in order to promulgate his personal, social, and political views. This does not mean that judges who adhere to their, this philosophy will find that they always agree in their interpretation of the Constitution. We have an excellent example of this in the record of two judges who vacancies whose I now have a duty to fulfill, Mr. Justice Black and Mr. Justice Harlan. When they retired from the court, most observers labeled Mr. Justice Black as a liberal and Mr. Justice Harlan as a conservative. I would say that both were constitutionalists. It is true they disagreed sharply in many cases, but as I learned not only from reading their opinions over the years, but from appearing twice before them and arguing the case before the Supreme Court, both were great judges with a brilliant ability to ask questions that went to the heart of the matter before them, and then to make a decision based on their honest interpretation of the Constitution. In the debate over the confirmation of the two individuals I have selected, it may be charged that they are conservatives. This is true, but only in a judicial, not in a political sense. During my campaign for the presidency, I pledged to nominate the Supreme Court individuals who shared my judicial philosophy, which is basically a conservative philosophy. Let me give an example of what that philosophy means. 21 months ago, Mr. Walter Lippmann wrote, "The balance of power within our society has turned dangerously against the peace forces, against governors and mayors and legislators, against the police and the courts." I strongly share this view. Over the past few years, many cases have come before the court involving the delicate balance between the rights of society and the rights of defendants accused of crimes against society. Honest and dedicated constitutional lawyers have disagreed as to where and how to maintain that balance. As a judicial conservative, I believe some court decisions have gone too far in weakening the peace forces against the criminal forces in our society. In maintaining the delicate balance between the rights of society and defendants accused of crime, I believe the peace forces must not be denied the legal tools they need to protect the innocent from criminal elements. I believe we can strengthen the hand of the peace forces without compromising our precious principle that the rights of individuals accused of crime must always be protected. It is with these criteria in mind that I have selected the two men whose names I will send to the Senate tomorrow. Everything that Lewis F. Powell has undertaken, he has accomplished with distinction and honor, both as a lawyer and as a citizen. Excellence has marked his career since his days as a student in Washington and Lee, where he was Phi Beta Kappa, first in his class in law school. Mr. Powell has practiced law in Richmond since 1931, except 4 years of distinguished service in World War II. In his unique legal career, he has received virtually every honor his profession can bestow. He has been president of the American College of Trial Lawyers, the American Bar Foundation, the American Bar Association. In that latter role, he provided leadership in the provision of legal services for the needy and for the revision of the standards of the administration of criminal justice. Lewis Powell is from Virginia. But like another great Virginian, Chief Justice Marshall, Lewis Judd Powell is recognized by his legal colleagues throughout the nation as being a man who represents not just Virginia or the South. He is first and foremost a great American. William Rehnquist has been outstanding in every intellectual endeavor he has undertaken. He was graduated from Stanford University Phi Beta Kappa in 1948. He graduated first in his class in the Stanford University Law School in 1952. He was then awarded one of the highest honors a law graduate can receive. He was chosen as law clerk for Mr. Justice Robert Jackson, one of the most outstanding members of the court in the past half century. In this position, he acted as legal assistant to the justice in his His duties included legal research of the highest order. On leaving the court, Mr. Rehnquist engaged in the general practice of law for 16 years in Phoenix, Arizona, until 1969, when I appointed him Assistant Attorney General, Office of Legal Counsel. The legal counsel is a very special function in the Department of Justice, serving as the chief interpreter of the Constitution and the statutes of the United States. He is, in effect, the president's lawyer's lawyer. He has discharged his responsibility in this capacity with such great distinction that among the thousands of able lawyers who serve in the federal government, William Rehnquist ranks at the very top as a constitutional lawyer and a legal scholar. Mr. Powell and Mr. Rehnquist will add distinction and excellence to the highest degree of the Supreme Court of the United States. I am asking the Senate to approve these nominations promptly so that the court can move forward on the backlog is building up because of the two vacancies that have occurred in recent weeks. Let me add a final word regarding a subject that is very close to my heart because of my legal background and because of my years of study of the American system of government. I note with great distress a growing tendency to criticize the Supreme Court as an institution. Let all Americans recognize that every individual has a right to disagree with decisions in the court. After those decisions are handed down, however, it is our obligation to obey the law, whether we like it or not. And it is our duty as citizens to respect the institution of the Supreme Court of the United States. We have had many historic, even sometimes violent debates throughout our history about the role of the Supreme Court. Let us never forget that respect for the court as the final interpreter of the law is indispensable if America is to survive as a free society. Except for the contribution he may be able to make to the cause of world peace, there is probably no more important legacy that a president can leave at these times than his appointment to the Supreme Court of the United States. I believe that Chief Justice Burger and Mr. Justice Blackmun, by their conduct and their decisions, have earned the respect not only of those who supported them at the time I had nominated them, but also of those who opposed them. It is my firm conviction that Lewis Powell, William Rehnquist, will earn the same respect, and that as guardians of our Constitution, they will dedicate their lives to the great goal of building respect for law and order and justice throughout the land.
Hello.
Well, what's new on the battlefront today? That's right. That's good. No, I didn't see it. I'm impressed. Good. I'm good for him. John, this is a good fellow, maybe to do what I say, and we've got people start paying attention to it. It's right, it's got guts, it's good. What does it show? What is Justin? Still pretty high, maybe lower than that. Are it still reeling? Those people are just, they're just with it. I just shouldn't have it reel now, you know, this bothers a bit. Not a bit. I didn't think the prime rate went down fast enough, right? No. About that. Why are the redemptions going? What's the reason for that? Okay. Well, how the hell did that, how the story get out there? That's strange. As the market went up, they didn't buy the mutuals, I see. What the hell is planning to do? Is he talking to Arthur or anybody talking to him? What's he say? One or two appointments for that boy. Two now, apart from other two of them. I hang out over him. He's got two other candidates. Except we've got to get some people that are going to be more on our side. Yeah. Hey, Pat is planning it. Okay. Well, they can raise all of our money. So. A few people talk to him. Conley, unfortunately, is out of town, so. Archer's. He really said, goddamn cantankerous, so, I mean, he was, we had him, you know, we brought him into the whole phase, in the whole phase one thing and so forth, and he's had his way and everything, and, you know, and goddamn him, he's now not playing the game. He would say something. Tell Sapphire that everybody in the street is really taking him on. That Sapphire, you know, they would. Well, tell Bill to hit Arthur in the fact that Arthur, you're looking bad in the street. Arthur likes to fuck up and think he looks good. Yeah, George thinks that the third quarter was probably weaker. In great part because of money supply. I don't know. He may be wrong. Maybe for other reasons. I don't know. Always put up a little bit. And again, but now it's funny too. Yeah, just go up and all the time. It goes up on his jags and so forth. And they did. Yeah, people are, except for this nut Janeway, everybody's predicting a good year next year. What the crisis is America? Can anybody talk to him? Is he gets so broadly played? He's an egotist, I know him from way back. Used to be with the police, but he's an utter guy. That's their right. Yeah, good. But it's cold, but the cold. And that cold was in the news Sunday this morning. Yeah. Holman told me that the reason the Postal Secretary Harris has been canceled. Now, that's the goddamnedest thing I ever heard of. They never canceled even the agents kicking us. Because you realize that this is terribly important. This is the one that's carried all across the country. What's he say? Got to. play in there, goes, he mustn't do it. Yeah, we'll leave that to you, too, soon. Alright. Let me know. You don't know what it is yet, though. That's right. Well, he'll tell us, but they haven't told him, but call us. They may not go Sunday. They may be, have a annoying feeling despite all their talk about purity and their close to change. Harris. Rumsfeld, the dramatic upsurge support because of total on their birthday, other than they haven't heard a word from him since. They may have just flushed it. Oh, the hell, we don't care. We don't give a damn. Yeah, the Supreme Court thing is going to shift the bastards a little. They may turn them down, but if they do, at least I will tell you what they are, but I'll tell you that each one was first in his class in a dance at law school, so, what do you think of that? And one was a clerk to a Supreme Court of Justice, so God damn it, and both are conservative as hell. This class, you know, something, what the hell, I was high in my class, I was third, and he's fresh, you know, you just got to get a real bear cat. In any class, but these factors are like your stops and so forth. And this is, the excellence thing is totally entrepreneurial. I'm never going to get at that again. So this speech will satisfy. On the other hand, I also talk about philosophy. I say that we also need somebody that has, as I call it, a conservative judicial philosophy, which means, in most cases, all the dog and the rights of the accused, the rights of the society that society as well as that accused. I'm getting that, because that's the only thing that the people hear, that they don't give a goddamn about excellent people. Not one bit. This is all editorial crap. Yeah. So, but I crack it again. This will kill them, they hope that the excellence thing will kill them, but I'm not going to repeat that again. Excellence thing. Well, point out this fact. Both of these men were first in their class. Both were Phi Beta Kappa. Both Phi Beta Kappa. Both were first in their class in law school. Not second, not third, but first. And by God, that's awfully hard to beat for Chuck. Well, we all did. What the hell? I mean, lucky that you didn't pass. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I was lucky to be third. We just think of other people out. I'm going to guess. We have to play around with it. They're putting out a blocking pass. Well, it's like a screen pass, basically. Digger says they're climbing the walls because they cannot find the names, and they may find it before. Well, news is going on now about 6:30. They're coming in. If they do leave, then I'm going to kill somebody. If I have to do this for them, only 3 people know. Okay. Bye bye. Thousands of letters from all over the country recommending scores of able men and women for appointment to these vacancies in the court. sat left by the retirement and death of Mr. Justice Black, a former United States Senator. There has been strong support for the appointment of a member of the Senate of the House, so that the viewpoint of view of the Congress. I recommend the appointment of a woman, since no woman has ever been named as Supreme Court. A number of others have recommended the appointment of representatives of religious, racial, and nationality groups not presently represented on the court. I believe the Supreme Court should, in the broadest sense, be represented with entire group. With only 9 seats to fill, obviously every group in this country can be represented on the court. These are the criteria I believe should be applied in naming people to the court. The Supreme Court is the highest judicial body in this country. Its members should be among the very best lawyers in the nation. The two individuals I am nominating for the court meet that standard to an exceptional degree. Second consideration is the judicial philosophy of those who are to serve in the court. I emphasize the word judicial because whether an individual is a Democrat or Republican cannot and should not be a decisive factor in determining whether he should be appointed to the court. By judicial philosophy, I do not mean agreeing with the president on every issue. Be a total repudiation of our constitutional system. The judges on the Supreme Court, or any federal court for that matter, were like puppets on a string pulled by the president who appointed them. When I appointed Chief Justice Burger, I told him that from the day that he was confirmed for the Senate, he could expect that I would never talk to him about a case before the court. In the case of both Chief Justice Burger and Mr. Justice Blackmun, and in the case of the two nominees that I shall be sending to court tomorrow, their sole obligation is to the Constitution and to the American people and not to the president who appointed them. As far as judicial philosophy is concerned, it is my belief that it is the duty of a judge to interpret the Constitution and not to place himself above the Constitution or outside the Constitution. He should not twist or bend the Constitution in order to promulgate his personal, political, and social views. This doesn't mean that judges who adhere to this philosophy will find that they always agree in their interpretation of the Constitution. We have an excellent example of this from the record of the two judges' vacancies I nominated to fill, Justice Black and Justice Holland. When they retired from the court, most observers labeled Mr. Justice Black as a liberal and Mr. Justice Holland as a conservative. I would say that both were constitutional. It is true they disagreed sharply in many cases, but as I learned not only from reading their opinions over the years, but from a period twice before them, and argue in case before the Supreme Court, both were great judges with the brave ability to ask questions that went to the heart of the matter, and then make a decision based on their honest interpretation of the Constitution. In the debate over the confirmation of the two individuals I have selected, it may be charged that they are conservatives. This is true, but only in a judicial, not a political sense. During my campaign for the presidency, I pledged to nominate to the Supreme Court individuals who shared my judicial philosophy, which is basically a conservative philosophy. Let me give an example of what that philosophy means. 21 months ago, Mr. Walter Lippmann wrote, "The balance of power within our society has turned dangerously against the peace forces, against governors and mayors and legislatures, against the police and the courts." I strongly share this view. Over the past few years, many cases have come before the court involving the delicate balance between the rights of society and the rights of defendants accused of crime against society. Honest and dedicated constitutional lawyers have disagreed as to where and how to maintain that balance. As a judicial conservative, I believe some court decisions have gone too far in weakening the peace forces as against the criminal forces in our society. In maintaining the delicate balance between the rights of society and defendants accused of crime, I believe the peace forces must not be denied the legal tools they need to protect the innocent from criminal demands, criminal elements. I believe we can strengthen the hands of the peace forces without compromising our precious principle that the rights of individuals accused of crime must all be protected. It is with these criteria in mind that I have selected the two men whose names I will send to the Senate tomorrow. Everything that Lewis F. Powell has undertaken, he has accomplished with distinction and honor, both as a lawyer and as a citizen. Excellence has marked his career since his days as a student at Washington Elite, where he was 5'8" captain and first in his class in law school. Mr. Powell practiced law in Richmond since 1931, except for 4 years of distinguished service in World War II. In his unique legal career, he has received virtually every honor this nation can bestow, his profession can bestow. He has been president of the American College of Trial Lawyers, the American Bar Foundation, and the American Bar Association. In the latter role, he provided leadership and professional legal services for the needy, with the revision of standards of administration and justice. Louis Powell is from Virginia, but like another great Virginian, Chief Justice Marshall, Louis Powell is recognized by his legal colleagues throughout the nation as being a man who represents not just Virginia and the South. He is first and foremost a great American. William Rehnquist has been outstanding in every intellectual endeavor he has undertaken. He was graduated from Stanford University, Phi Beta Kappa in 1948. He graduated first in his class from Stanford Law School in 1952. He was then awarded one of the highest honors a law graduate can receive. He was chosen as law clerk for Mr. Justice Robert Jackson, one of the most outstanding members of the court in the past half century. His position, he acted as legal assistant to the justice, and his duties included legal research of the highest order. Upon leaving the court, Mr. Rehnquist engaged in the general practice of law for 16 years in Phoenix, Arizona, until 1969, when I appointed him Assistant Attorney General, Office of Legal Counsel. The legal counsel in the Justice Department has a very special function, serving as the chief interpreter of the Constitution and the statutes of the United States. He is, in effect, the president's loyal reporter. I have read opinion after opinion that he has provided on the Constitution. I have not always known the Constitution. And he does a superb, absolutely superb job. He's discharged his responsibility with such great distinction that among the thousands of able lawyers who serve in the federal government, William Rehnquist rates as the very top as a constitutional lawyer and as a legal scholar. Mr. Powell, Mr. Rehnquist. Well, that distinction and excellence to the highest degree, Supreme Court of the United States. I am asking the Senate to approve their nominations promptly so that the court can move forward on the backlog that is building up because of the debate that has occurred recently. Let me add a final word with regard to a subject that is very close to my heart because of my legal background, because of my years of study with the American system of government. I have noted with great distress a growing tendency to criticize the Supreme Court as an institution. Let all Americans recognize that every individual has a right to disagree with the decisions of the court. After all, decisions are handed down, it is our obligation to obey the law, whether we like it or not. And it is our duty as citizens to respect the institution of the Supreme Court of the United States. We have had many historic and even sometimes violent debates throughout our history about the role of the Supreme Court. Let us never forget that respect for the court as the final interpreter of the law is indispensable to the survival of freedom in America. Except for the contribution he may be able to make to the cause of world peace, there is probably no more important legacy that a president leaves in these times than his appointments to the Supreme Court of the United States. I believe that Chief Justice Berger and Mr. Justice Blackmun, by their conduct and their decisions, earn the respect not only of those who supported them at the time I nominated them, but of those who opposed them. It is my firm conviction that Louis Powell and William Rehnquist will earn the same respect, and that as guardians of our Constitution, they will dedicate their lives to the great goal of building respect for law, order, of building respect for law, order, and justice throughout the land. Yeah, how many words? All right, count them, call me back. During a four-year term, the President of the United States makes over 3,000 major appointments to various government agencies, various government positions. Our most important appointments, by far the most important appointments he makes, are the Supreme Court of the United States. Presidents come and presidents go, but the Supreme Court, through its decisions, goes on forever. Because they will make decisions which will affect your lives, the lives of your children for generations to come. I should like to share with you tonight my reasons for selecting the two individuals whose names I will send to the Senate tomorrow for confirmation as members of the Supreme Court of the United States. For the past month, I have received thousands of letters from all over the country. Yeah. Thank you. Recommending scores of able men and women for appointment to the two vacancies in the court. Because one of the vacancies is that left by the retired and dead Mr. Justice Black, former United States Senator, who expects strong support for the appointment of a member of the House and Senate. So that the point of view of the Congress would be adequately represented in the court. A great number of letters have recommended the appointment of a woman to the sole military in the Supreme Court. A number of others have recommended the appointment of representatives of religious, racial, and nationality groups not presently represented in the court. I believe that the Supreme Court should, in the broadest sense, be representative of the entire nation. But with only 9 seats to fill, obviously every group in the country cannot be represented on the court. These are the criteria I believe should be applied to naming people to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is the highest judicial body in this country. Its members, therefore, should be among the very best. The court is to be able to keep up with the evil warriors of the world. Creation. Second consideration is the judicial philosophy of those who are serving the court. I emphasize the word judicial, because whether an individual is a Democrat or Republican cannot or should not be a policy factor in determining whether he should be appointed or not. By judicial philosophy, I do not mean to agree with the President on every issue. It would be a total repudiation of our constitutional system if judges in the Supreme Court or any federal court for that matter were like puppets on the string pulled by the President to appoint them. When I appointed Chief Justice Burke, I told him the day he was confined to the court, you can expect that I would never talk to him about a case pending before the court. The case of both Chief Justice Burger and Mr. Justice Black, and the case of the two nominees that will be sent to the Senate tomorrow, their sole obligation is to the Constitution and to the American people, not to the American people. For our judicial philosophy is concerned, it is my belief that it is the duty of a judge to interpret the Constitution and not to place himself above the Constitution or outside the Constitution. He should not twist or bend the Constitution in order to promulgate his personal, political, and social views. This does not mean that judges who adhere to their philosophy will find that they always agree in their interpretation of the Constitution. We have an excellent example of this in the record of two judges' vacancies I now have the duty to fill, Mr. Justice Black and Mr. Justice Harlan. Last night, they deliberately tuned the, turned the lights down some to get a better picture. And this time I want the lights up regardless of, I'm not concerned about the picture content this time. You know what I mean? I want him to know that, put all that under lights. Okay?
You've had an excellent example of this, and I reckon with two judges and vacancies I now have a duty to fill, Mr. Justice Black and Mr. Justice Harlan. When they retire from the court, most observers have labeled Mr. Justice Black as liberal, Mr. Justice Harlan as conservative. I would say that both were constitutionals. Well, there was a major truth in that. To be sharply medicated, because I've learned not only from reading their opinions over the years, but from a very twice before them an argument case before the Supreme Court. Both were great judges with a great ability to answer questions. They went from the heart of the fighter for them, and then to make a decision based on their honest interpretation of the Constitution. In the debate over the confirmation of the two individuals I have selected, it may be charged that they are conservatives. This is true. This is true. Judicial. But in a judicial, not a political. During my campaign for the presidency, I pledged to nominate Supreme Court individuals who share my judicial philosophy, which is basically a conservative philosophy. Let me give an example of what that philosophy means. 21 months ago, Mr. Warren Lipton wrote, "The balance of power within our society has turned dangerously against the peace forces, against governors and mayors and legislatures, against the police and the courts." I strongly share this view. Over the past 2 years, many cases have come before the court involving a delicate balance between the rights of society and the rights of men. Defendants accused of crimes against them, honest and dedicated constitutional lawyers, disagree as to where and how to maintain that balance. As a judicial conservative, I believe some court decisions have gone too far in weakening the peace forces as against the criminal forces in our society. In maintaining this delicate balance between the rights of society and defendants accused of crime, I believe that the peace forces must not be denied the legal tools they need to protect the innocent from criminal elements. I believe we can strengthen the hand of peace forces without compromising our precious principle that the rights of individuals accused of crimes must also be protected. It is with these criteria in mind that I have selected the two men whose names I will send to the Senate tomorrow. Everything that Lewis F. Powell has undertaken, he has accomplished with distinction and honor, both as a lawyer and as a citizen. Excellence has marked his career since his days as a student of Washington and Lee, where he was Phi Beta Kappa and first in his class in law school. He practiced law in Richmond since 1931, except for 4 years of distinguished service in World War II. In his unique legal career, he has received virtually every honor his profession can bestow. He's been president of the American College of Trial Lawyers, the American Bar Foundation, the American Bar Association. The latter role will provide leadership in the Division of Legal Services for the Navy and for the revision of standards for administration of criminal federal justice. Lewis Powell is from Virginia. Like another great Virginian, Chief Justice Marshall, Lewis Powell is recognized by his legal colleagues throughout the nation as being a man who represents not just Virginia or the South. He is first and foremost a great American. William Rehnquist has been outstanding in every intellectual endeavor he has undertaken. He was graduated from Stanford University Phi Beta Kappa in 1948. He graduated first in his class from the Stanford University Law School in 1952. He was then awarded one of the highest honors the law graduates can receive. He was chosen as law clerk for Mr. Justice Robert Jackson, one of the most outstanding members of the court in the past half century. In this position, he's acted as a legal assistant for justice, and his duties included legal research in the highest order. On leaving the court, he has engaged in the general practice of law for 16 years in Phoenix, Arizona, until 1969, when I appointed Assistant Attorney General, Office of Legal Counsel. Legal counsel has a very special function in the Department of Justice, serving as the chief interpreter of the Constitution and the statutes of the United States. He is, in effect, the president's lawyer as well. As a senior partner in a major New York law firm, and as one who's had the opportunity to meet hundreds of able lawyers throughout this country, I would say that William Rankin, as one of the finest legal minds, of any man I've ever met, he's discharged responsibility with such great distinction. When the thousands of able lawyers served federal government, he raised at the very top. Lewis Powell and William Rehnquist will have distinction and excellence. The highest degree, Supreme Court of the United States, I'm asking the Senate to approve their nominations and to move forward in the back of the line. Let me add a final word regarding the subject that's very close to my heart. President, people back in front of this country. Manolo, what time is it?
5 to 7.
5 to 7. And the men will be here at 10 after 7, will
they?
The men?
Yes, sir.
Oh, are they here or they're going to be at the other?
They, in the Mr. Porterfield office, they will do at 10 past 7.
All right, fine. I'll go over there. Great goal, ability, respect for law, justice, and order throughout the world.